From Attila's Multimedia in Courtney, BC, you're listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Darren Howlett. Thanks for joining us again as we take another tour through the culinary world of the Comox Valley and beyond.
We're going to start on another episode of our three-part one where we're looking at restaurant costs. We did food costs on the last episode, so I thought this time we'd sort of break into labor costs and sort of talk about what labor cost is. What is labor cost to you, Darren?
The difference between making it and not making it.
Well, that's exactly. I think that's the biggest goal is that you always have to make sure that your labor is less than your revenue.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this a couple of times. You've been in charge of a few places. I've had a couple of businesses as well. I've had ones that ran low labor, very little need to have very many people on board. And then other ones where it only worked, where there was tons of people working. So yeah, it's all over the board. There's a lot of different ways you can finesse it, a lot of different business types. But I know that you've done a little bit of...
A little bit of research here. Yeah. And well, it's a little bit of research, but just really putting my thoughts all together on a piece of paper. I always like to think about it as labor costs is one of your most or one of your highest costs in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're looking at it from two ends. You've got, and I think this is people get maybe who don't know a lot about restaurants, but you really have two sections in a restaurant that you focus on, and that's front of house.
Yeah.
Which is your servers, your Let's go through the people that
sure,
are
sure, yeah, front of yeah. House, your you front know. Of house, yeah, front of house. You've got your servers, your bartenders, your hosts, maybe bus people. You've got any other support for the service staff. You've got
bartender, back bar. I mean, there's a lot of people that go in, and depending on how big your restaurant is, there's quite a few people. I let you take that one because that's more of your strength, I hope.
And then there can also be front of house management, which is also. You know, that's another cost that some people overlook, the fact that you need somebody that's managing those 12 or 13 people in the front of house.
Exactly.
But then you get into the back of house.
Back of house, and it's not just the chef back there.
Yeah.
Some days it feels like it, but no, I shouldn't say that. That's never my case. You have a lot of cooks around you. And I know we've talked about different positions, you know, sous chefs, garde manger, grill cooks. You know, there's a load of different positions in there, and everyone's got their...
Also the people that fall in there that other people might, that aren't in the industry, like back of house includes all your prep guys, includes your dishwasher.
Yeah, your most important person in the kitchen.
He's servicing all those guys, making sure they have the plate where they need. And the
So there's a lot of wheels turning and a lot of expenses that go out towards the staff that sort of keep the place going. And so you have to look at those expenses. And there's it's really tough because in a lot of things you can look at, it is a fixed cost. You have to pay labor. There's no way around it. And you know that you open at this time and you close at this time, and you need to pay for someone to be there during those times. And that's pretty much going to be a set set wage.
So in that respect, that there's a certain amount of it that's fixed.
But it's also, you can look at it as, I like to look at it as more of a semi-variable when you've got more than a couple people. And you have to look at some aspects of changing things to get things at the right places and looking at some things that we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the first thing is that people need to know what labor cost is or labor percentages. And that's sort of basing off where you are. And like you said, you had some that have a lot of expenses, some that have very little. And it depends on what you're selling and what you're trying to do. If you're a high-end restaurant or just a casual fine dining, or if you're more of a pub style where you're just pushing drinks, that's you don't need as much. You know, if you have very few food items, you shouldn't have a very expensive labor cost for that. So, but I think the golden rule is, and a lot of times, it works out to around 30%. And
now,
if you're looking good, if you're sitting in a 30%, you know, most places can be running 18 to 20% is great. Whereas other places, and we're talking about more your places that you're doing all scratch cooking and stuff, it could be as high as 35, 38. I've heard in some cases 60%, which is not a good place to be at, because then you start realizing that your labor cost is much greater than your revenue.
Yeah.
When you start adding food costs and all those other expenses in there, it's like
absolutely
not a good situation.
Right.
So I thought we'd talk a little bit about wage,
because
when you're calculating this in, it's not just, I pay him $12 an hour,
right? And you don't have
$13 an hour, you know, you have to take into consideration some other expenses.
Right. Yeah, you can say, well, I pay this person $12 an hour and I need them for 8 hours this day, and it looks like a set cost, but no, you actually have to pay their, you have to be considering their vacation pay, any benefits, you have to consider CPP, UI, or EI, sorry, any of those remittances that you have to make to the government every 2 weeks or every month. There's also other things. I mean, you got to take into account too that sometimes people need that little incentive, or they need that little extra, or they need that little thank you.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, you'll find that you won't keep good people for very long. So sometimes, you know, there's extra on top of the wage that you've got to factor in.
Yeah, that little show of appreciation and gratitude for things. And you've done paychecks many a time. And
yeah. But they all factor in. Like, your labor cost isn't face value. It's not that $12 an hour. You got to figure it out, though. Like, mm-hmm. it's different for every place, and you got to figure out what it is per person or overall.
And that gives you a bit of ability to sort of fix and change things too, mm-hmm. because you can adjust things depending on how many hours and Absolutely. What everyone's up to and how the things are going with.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to get into them in a little bit. I know that you've got some, that we're going to talk about some solutions to some of the difficulties at the back end. So yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there. Next thing I was talking about too, is you also have to look at it. In a lot of restaurants, you have the hourly wage.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a salary wage, mm-hmm. whereas some days I like to think of it as slavery.
Yeah, pretty much is sometimes.
Yeah, some days it feels like it, especially in a restaurant being in a management position. A lot of managers get that salary position, and so they usually get to stick it out for those extra moments.
I remember when I was I used to own a nightclub, and I remember having a discussion, and it wasn't heated, but this one person felt that they deserved a little bit more per hour, and I did not see that. I felt other people around them did, but not necessarily them. And they said it got to it, and we actually sat down and calculated what I made per hour there for what I took home, and they were like, bear in mind they were pushing for an extra $2 an hour, and I'm like, and we figured out I was making $5.15 an hour.
Right.
And they were like, what? They couldn't believe it. They were like, but you're the owner. I'm like, right. So I put in the most hours because it's the way I can save the most.
It's at that moment that as an owner that you start to go, oh,
that's
right.
What I'm worth $5 an hour.
But I'm like, I really need to keep this person here. So
yeah.
I will keep paying them.
But
just
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that you being on salary in various positions or whatever, I'm sure you've had those days too, or those weeks where you're like, oh, I put in so many hours. This is what it ended up being.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try not to look at that, you know, because it's doing a good job and making quality food that kind of what churns me and keeps my wheels going. So I was going to say is that we should always also take a little bit of caution when you're looking at labor costs, because
mm-hmm.
I know as a restaurateur being in that situation where you look at it and you go, oh, I'm running a 34% labor cost.
Right.
I'm like, that's a bit steep, you know, but then you really have to take into consideration the things that are affecting that reason. And you can't just look at it. And I like that we brought up the fact of front of back of house,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's something you have to look at. You say, this is my total percentage and it's mm-hmm. a little bit high. I'd like to bring it down, but it doesn't really give me the details of where I'm mm-hmm. losing, where I'm spending too much labor. Is it that I have too many servers on?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that I have too many bussers on? Or is it mm-hmm. that I have too many dishwashers on? Like, is it the back of house, which is one that is affecting my bottom line?
Right.
So you sort of have to look at, I mean, first of all, is wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a hard one, especially mm-hmm. in where we're at a section right now where there's a lot hard to find staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we did a whole episode about the global concern of lack of cooks in the
right.
in the world,
yep.
not just in the Comox Valley or Vancouver Island, British Columbia or Canada. We're talking, this is a global concern. You know, the other things that affect it is your number of guests. Like straight up, if one day you have 10 guests
mm-hmm.
and the next day you have 100 guests, well, I'm sorry, but that 10 guest day is, you're still going to need to have those people in there.
That's right.
And so that's sort of something you can start looking at. And then the availability
mm-hmm.
of labor. Mm-hmm. You know, or the availability. yeah. I can't read my own writing today.
Yeah.
You know, to think about that, your ability to use that labor and what they can accomplish within the time that they're provided.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they're going out for an extra coffee break or,
yeah,
you know, like you got to keep an eye on that and just make sure that you have a productive staff and that they're able to
absolutely
get the job done, because that will cost.
Well, and that's just it. So with these, you know, fixed costs and the semi-variable costs of labor and the fact that, yeah, if you, let's just, for the sake of ease, let's just say that the business is fairly consistent,
right?
But labor is running high. So there's some solutions. The first thing you do is not necessarily, you know, as you were just saying, the labor is running high.
Don't fire everyone.
Yeah. You don't cut back right away. Yeah, that's reactionary, because yeah, there could be a reason for it. And that's one of the first things you need to do. You need to look at what that reasoning was. It could be that you had a couple of upcoming major events and you needed to prep well in advance. And so you up the schedule that week to get some of that advanced prep done. You know, and so you, all of a sudden your prep or your orders are skewed.
Yeah.
But it's going to leverage out over the end once that bill gets paid for that caterer, it might be, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, you've got a couple of ideas.
Well, and this is what I like what you're saying is that, yeah, you know, like you're looking at it over a time period.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of after that one moment, one day by day, mm-hmm, it can be a little bit much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, over a week, over a month, mm-hmm, you can sort of see a better picture.
Yeah.
And then breaking it into sections and sort of seeing which areas are more costly than others.
Right.
And, you know, straight up, kitchen's going to cost more than front of house.
Right.
It's higher wages.
Yeah. Well, and that's hours. Just it. I mean, generally your front of house people are making minimum or close to minimum because they're getting offset with a tipping position.
Yeah.
So you don't get that in the back of house. And
I know that's a whole nother subject.
We can talk about that another time. But the back of house doesn't see that. So their wages naturally are higher than the front of house. So the kitchen or the back of house wages are always going to be higher than the front of house. But there is a balance there and there's a reason. Like everybody knows that. It's just part of doing business.
Business, yeah. Yeah. And so it's fun because I think this is part of being, mm-hmm, a chef or being a restaurant owner or being a manager in a restaurant is sort of watching how these all develop and how it all watches. And it's funny how your attention gets brought to labor for a while. Mm-hmm. And so you start strictening up on labor and the next thing you're finding you got your food costs is sneaking up on a bit on you. So then you're switching back over to food costs yeah, and right, then you're switching back over to labor costs.
Yeah. So
it's kind of a back and forth thing. Uh-huh. But I think the things you always got to be as being in a manager or being in a position that you're watching is keep an eye on the clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds so simple, but just being able to take a look at that clock.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on your prep list. Know what's happening in your kitchen and going, okay, mm-hmm, I know it's going to start slowing down. It's time to start peeling people off. And,
right.
And you can save a little bit of money. I mean, you have to watch it because you don't want to cut someone too early and then, mm-hmm, you're finding yourself spending an extra 2 hours there because you've got to make up for
right
something that you cut for them. But just keeping an eye on that clock and just being able to say, hey, you know, like,
yeah,
and approaching your staff saying, why did it take you an extra 2 hours to finish up tonight, mm-hmm, when it only took you an hour last night? You know, just keeping those questions, keeping that dialogue going.
And, you know, I feel like we should just go into touch just really quickly. If you don't work in the food industry, which, you know, I would say probably 95% of the population doesn't, maybe it's 5%, maybe it's 10% of our population that works in the food industry. Something that you might not be aware is, yes, you're scheduled to start at a certain time in the food industry or in the hospitality industry, but very rarely, unless you're in high-end or very large resorts, high-end hotels or resorts, are you going to have an end to your shift. You have a start to your shift, and you're needed until you're no longer needed. And that's sort of a shifting. Like, I've worked in a million restaurants, and it's not specific to any one place. It's the way it goes. You're scheduled to start at a certain time, and you get an idea when you're going to get out of there, but it's never set. So that's what you're, when you're talking about peeling back, you're talking about at that point, it's time to start. Okay, we've quieted down. The majority of the people are served. It's time to look at starting to send people home. Their shifts are over. Like, you're ending them.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I think, if you're not from the restaurant, you might be a little concerned. You know, it's like that. How often, and you know, mm-hmm, this has happened a dozen times, where that table shows up at close, you know, where you got five minutes to go.
Oh my God.
As we used to always joke, is any shift cursed and bartended that there was always that table that walked in with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And they're guaranteed to order a well done or a chicken breast.
Yeah, a well-done steak or chicken breast, something that takes a half an hour to cook.
Right, and you know, that's part of the business. It's part of the job, but it's one of those ones that, you know, all the
kitchen. But yeah, I mean, and see, the case in point. So people will be, you know, I've seen that I know that we're getting a little deviated right there, but some people come in and they're like, well, you're still open. And yes, you are still open. And we are still offering our menu, but just know, like, I mean, we can never say it, but this is one of those insider things. So you come in at 5 minutes to closing and you order a couple of things that take a while. You've just cost the restaurant probably at least $80 to $100, if not $150, in that extra labor that they all have to stay. If you have six people that need to stay an extra half hour for you, I mean, it adds up. So it's not anybody doesn't want you to. It's like, not that the restaurant doesn't want you there. It's just, that's when you see that trepidation, you see that, it's just the restaurant at that time knowing, oh, this is going to cost us $150.
Yeah. And it's not always the worst thing, because, you know, sometimes you have a full restaurant and someone walks in at the last minute and it's not a big deal, you know, but it's when you've had a really slow night.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no one's come in for like a half an hour, 40 minutes. And then boom, you get that last table and you're like, all right, my station's clean and I'm going to stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And it's just part of the business. And
it is. Yeah, it is. Because exactly.
And I know.
I worry that I'm giving people the wrong thing. I mean, every restaurant is always thankful for any guest that comes through the door.
Exactly.
It's not about that. It's just,
it's one of those funny ones at the end of the day. I'm glad you brought that up, actually. Yeah. The other thing I like to look at is cross training.
Mm.
And I mean, this is good in a couple of ways. You're able to cut down costs because you can have a person that can work two stations or three stations you know, they can take over at slow moments. And I'm going to go to front of house for this, it doesn't work at all places, but I'm saying if you have at a slow time, if you have your servers can pour some drinks or do some drinks, then you don't have to have a bartender on.
Right.
So you're going to save on that little bit of cost. Or, you know, that's the thing. Like, if this table comes in the last minute, you can send the bartender home.
Right.
And the servers can take over and pour some drinks. Same way in the kitchen, you know, you have your prep guy there and you can send him home a little bit earlier. Or you can send, say, your girl person home and prep person can come up and get a little bit of experience. So there's two ways of looking at this. The other one is, you get to train your staff and you get to give them a reason to grow themselves, which is something I kind of like. And I like to push is like to get my staff to sort of get more involved and become more part of the whole equation. So
I found too, that I always like to cross train staff, for the very same reason that you just said. I didn't find that necessarily one person could take over a second station,
mm-hmm.
but I could have three people. If I was slow, I could remove one of them. And the other two would be able to pick up the station of the other.
Right.
That ends up working up more for me. But the other thing about cross training, it's much like you said, is, it's a motivator. And people love, I loved when people came to me and I hired them for a skill, but I knew that they were walking out of there when they left eventually more skilled. Mm-hmm. That they learned a lot more and they were now more employable elsewhere. It was always important to me that everybody walked out the door better off than having come through the door, you know?
And I think it works too, because if that person can save you money by being cross-chained and do a couple stations, that gives you an ability to pay them more money.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, because that's where it all comes down at the end of the day and what the sales say. So
yeah, I totally agree. That's my favorite out of all the solutions that we've talked about or are going to talk about. That is my favorite, is the cross-training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one. And this is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes into your whole everything to do with your restaurant, and that's layout.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking the actual physical layout, which is a huge one, is, you know, positioning things in the right way and making it ease for people to get around. I know there are some restrictions that you can never get around. The size of your building, you know, where the entrances are, where the exits are, all those little things. But being able to position things in the place that they're easiest are very accessible.
Yeah.
You know, that makes life easier for everyone. It makes things go smoother. So it's taking a look at those items and being like, hey, can we make this more efficient?
Right.
And the other layout part is talking about menus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cutting back on your menu. If you're finding you're having too much labor costs in the back, cut back on your menu.
Yeah.
If you can't follow up on something else, you know, you can modify things. You can simplify dishes, or you can make something more challenging, you know. And
case at a restaurant that we both worked at in the last little while, the customers really reacted to a couple of menu items being removed. And they weren't necessarily replaced. There was just two items that were removed, and people still that were very big fans of it do complain and do, you know, constantly bring it up every time they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't think that they realized that the labor involved priced that food out of being equatable. Like, it became to the point where there was so much prep in that food or in that dish that it stopped making any money. And to keep it there was just it was absolutely servicing nobody. Nobody was benefiting from it except for maybe the prep guy was getting a couple extra hours, you know?
Yeah.
And so things like that, sometimes they have to go. Like, they just mm-hmm. have to. It just becomes it. And that's exactly it. Like, when you're saying, look at your menu. If you have a couple of items that take forever for prep,
right,
maybe it's time to look at changing those up or keeping them as a recurring special.
Revamping them or... Yeah. Combining two things to make something the same, you
right.
know, like taking a prep step out of it, you know,
yeah,
changing a few ingredients. It's not that hard.
And I know, and we haven't really talked about it yet, but something that people don't understand, and I don't, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Profit is not anywhere in the realm that a lot of people think that it is. Profit is in the final couple of percent of, mm-hmm. so for every $100 spent, the profit, so long as everybody's, you know, taking care, due diligence, we've got the, you know, we've got staff refined, our staff costs down, our food costs are refined. The profit is that last $2 or $3. So all that waste, if there is any, comes out of that $2 or $3. So,
of course, yeah.
So, like, I don't, you know, there's such a fine line in restaurants where it becomes profitable.
And this is why 60% of them fail within the first 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a normal fact, you know, and it's kind of the challenge of it. And it comes down to these three. Food cost is too much. Labor is too much.
Yep, exactly.
And the overall expense of it is too much.
Yeah. These are the three things that govern everything about a restaurant,
right.
for sure.
Okay. I actually have these out of order, and I'm going to switch. I'm going to change it up here. But I'm going to say outside issues before I go into the next one.
Okay.
And that's really taking a look at what's happening around you. Mm-hmm. It's so quick to become focused on your day-to-day with inside this building, mm-hmm. but it's actually taking a look at what events are happening around you. Mm-hmm. And that's huge to affect your labor costs.
You mean like BC Hydro deciding to rip up the, or to take your power out?
Take your power out, but not take your power out? Yeah, that's kind of burns a little bit. But no, I'm thinking more of things like shows that are going on
right.
in certain areas. An event mm-hmm. that happens at a certain time, or an event that doesn't happen if there's nothing. If you're in an area that has like mm-hmm. lots of movies going on or theater shows, finding out the dates that there isn't a theater show, because you can probably guarantee you're not going to be as busy. You know, so taking those things into considerations and sort of looking at those outside events mm-hmm. and how they affect you. What time of year is it? Is it mm-hmm. Christmas? It's going to be, people go out a lot more in Christmas. You know,
right.
It's summertime, it's busier. It's just taking into account those. And so that leads to my next issue, which mm-hmm. is scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, and I know I'm guilty of it myself, get into just that carbon copy mm-hmm. of writing down the same.
The same, yep.
Bob comes in at 2.
Yeah.
Susie's in at 4.
Yeah.
Fred's in at 7.
That's every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Yeah.
And you just mark it down. Instead of actually taking a look at what's happening, taking a look at what events you have happening within your own establishment, what events are happening outside your establishment, and then doing your schedule a little bit more based on that. And you can tweak an hour here and an hour there.
Especially if you're going to take that approach of really being heavily involved in scheduling, you're going to make a couple of mistakes, and you're probably going to, you know, you're like, what? I just put 8 extra hours a week into scheduling and I'm not saving a penny, but you will down the road.
Yeah.
You'll start to figure it out and you will start to save yourself some money for sure.
Yeah. And then you can just go back and look at your clock and be like, all right, it's time to cut things and make things go away. And of course, here's another one for mm-hmm. cost savings. And I don't think people think about it as much, but taking care of your staff. You know, it's a health-life balance. If you're abusing your staff and you're running them hard, mm-hmm. and I know what happens in this industry, someone gets sick and then someone else gets sick and everyone's trying to work or someone hurts themselves. You know, that constant ongoing thing keeps going and building. Well, that's taking that time to be able to take care of those people so that they're there for you. And mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to have, you know, give give breaks and give some space to these people than new people all the time.
Because you got to figure for their first few weeks, they're in, they earn a paycheck contributing. Those first few weeks, they're learning.
Yeah.
So if you constantly replace people, your staff costs are going to be out the, like, it's going to be too much.
Right.
So taking that, like, absorbing that little bit of extra cost up front so that you know that your staff are, they're not running themselves redline the whole time. You know, they're able to take a breather, not getting so overworked there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making sure that little extra that you need to give.
Making sure they take that extra day once in a while.
And you're not, and then you're not constantly replacing people. You get to keep people. And
yeah. And I know I'm saying this and guilty of pushing people longer and stuff like that. And I feel, but it's something I'm gonna be able to work on. And so that brings me to sort of my next thing is when you're hiring, don't.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this because it's not the time with how thing is in our market right now for staffing. But, you know, take your time, as much time as you possibly can, to hire the right people.
Yeah.
And really take the extra time to hire earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it may cost you a little bit in the beginning, but if you can stretch that out over time, it can be very helpful. And it's a lot easier to find the right person than it is to find seven of people that do.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes.
Absolutely.
I've made this mistake of hiring the first person that walks in the door just because, and they seemed really good, and I didn't do my backgrounds on them, and it turned out horrible.
Right.
And so taking that little bit of extra effort is always a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can't really sum it up. Like if you're having to constantly train that new person, or you've got that one position that keeps turning over, you got to sort of sit down and analyze it, because if, you know, where is it, where, what is it that's making this to turn over so much? What to fix it? What can adjust it? Because, yeah, it's absolutely, you know, complete. What's the word? Like the restaurant, it hobbles them and have that position if they're conning through somebody new in whatever that position might be. If you're putting all that extra there, you're done.
Exactly. And so this is my other little trick for you that's maybe helpful. Finding a roster of part-timers. I know this sounds a lot easier but, you know, finding some people who are willing to work a couple shifts a week, or, you know, maybe one shift every couple weeks, you know, like finding that group of people who you can rely on and bring in and be like, and it was a casual thing and be, hey, I got someone who needs some time off here. Can you do a couple shifts for me? And usually it's nice if you can have that group of people. Yeah. It takes a little while to establish.
Yep.
But it definitely can make your life a lot busier, especially in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you talked about some of the busier periods, and there's always going to be right around the middle of the year, the times when business just starts taking off in the restaurant industry. It's when people are spending. And yeah, if you've got a handful of people that you can call on that are already trained, they know the lay of the land, way better than to hire a whole holiday staff or a whole, you know, just to get you through for all that extra volume. Good talking about all this, John.
Yeah.
I haven't sat down and thought about labor costs in a few years now, so good to think about it all over again.
You know, I just like to throw it in the back of my head just to sort of think about it and realize that it is. I mean, in my day in the restaurant, it's a constant battle.
Yeah,
and I have the numbers exactly in my head, but I sort of have that gut feeling when I look around and I'm like, you know, I know my team are always productive. You know, there's moments that I let them have that little casual time to chat and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just trying to be on top of everyone. And I know I spend most of my day being, you know, what's your next list? What's the next item to do? What's the next item to do?
Right.
And then being like, okay, what do you have to do before you go? Okay, let's go. Okay, as soon as you get that done, you're out of here. And it's funny because when you, especially with cooks, if you're like, okay, what do you have to do before you can get out of here? Because then you go, okay, get that done and you can get the hell out of here. And it's usually funny that they're just like, boom, done and gone, you know?
Yeah, so, right.
Or get that done and I'll bite and I don't know. Like, And it's just one of those ones. It's good. But it's one of those costs and it's just one of those things you have to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And so I guess next time as we continue to talk about overheads and...
Yeah.
And
the last of the big three that govern or run how... If you're profitable or not.
Yeah. I'd love to do a thing on profit, but it would be sort of like, we get money, maybe. So just like to thank you for joining and listening to the Equitable Valley podcast. We definitely like to have you listen to us. We'd love to hear a review or email about anything you'd love to know about the LA any food questions. Being at doing a couple other episodes and sort of segments to the podcast here. So if you've got some food facts you'd be interested about, maybe if you want us to talk about some upcoming events around here, you know, we're always, I think me and Darren are going to get into some challenges over the next little while.
Yeah, we should probably even do an episode of that, just talking about how dramatically the podcast is going to change soon, how much more content we're adding. So we, yeah, there's some challenges coming up. And challenges, not difficulties, challenges as in might be a little bit of a competition between the two of us.
That's right. Someone's, there may be a petition. So I got some ideas here. So,
all right.
So you can vote for your favorite, John or Darren. I'm just out there now. But we'd love to hear from you, and definitely email us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. Don't forget to get on iTunes. If you're an iTunes fan, we'd love to get a review. I think we're one review short of being posted on our reviews, so that would be great if some people could get out there and give us a couple reviews. You know what? Good or bad, we just love to hear from you. And Darren, you want to thank all our wonderful sponsors?
Absolutely. I want to thank the Outlet Cafe, as always, for all of their support, as well as Matilda's Multimedia, which here we are recording in. And we also have Truffle Butcher's Block, Beaufort Traditional. We also have Kirsten Wood Music.
Really. Blaine's just going to have to come in and chat with us about that one.
Yeah, time, he'll have to come and set it straight here. So, yeah, thanks to our sponsors. Because without them, we can't do this show.
All right. And thank you for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.